Hey everyone, I'm super excited and thrilled to have one of my favorite human beings, Scott Shute, who was a former head of mindfulness and compassion at LinkedIn. We actually met through a lot of I just want to acknowledge you because I benefited a lot from a lot of your mindfulness programs, from conscious business to, I mean, everything, right? At LinkedIn has an element of mindfulness to it. So really, really excited to have you here. And
yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah, and just a little bit more background about Scott. So he blends his experience being a Silicon Valley executive. And I know you're really big into mindfulness and you have a lot of, you're very plugged into that community as well. And you are the head of mindfulness and compassion programs. And your book is amazing, by the way. I really, really enjoyed it, laughed a lot. And just the way you're able to bring levity into some of these deep moments and deep lessons is inspiring. So just want to say, yeah, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. I appreciate that. It's good to be here. Hi, everybody.
So yeah, I'm sure a lot of people are probably curious what you're up to. I know it's very difficult to leave LinkedIn, especially because you have been so impactful and you've been at LinkedIn for a while. Would you like to share with us what you're up to now?
Sure. So I was at LinkedIn for 9 years. The first six, I was the VP of Global Customer Operations. And I called that my dream job. And then I had my lottery job, which was I was the head of mindfulness and compassion programs. And I did that for 3 years. And then I had this compulsion. I wanted my audience to be bigger than just the 16,000 or so LinkedIn people. I wanted to have a global audience. And I wrote the book, as you mentioned, came out in May of 2021, The Full Body Yes. And it just led me to this place where I just knew I wanted to be out in the world. And so now I'm out promoting the book. I'm doing speaking engagements. I'm doing coaching and consulting. And that is evolving over time. It's really interesting the types of things that people ask me to do. It starts with one thing and then ends in another. So as an example, I'm doing some consulting with cultures, with companies on their company culture, right? Especially companies that are just kind of getting started or they want to rethink it. So I'm in that world, but it's super fun. I have a lot of flexibility. It's a beautiful season of life.
Yes. And from like you said, your lottery job, right? From the outside perspective, it's like, wow, like he really does have this dream job. And I've connected with a lot of folks and part of that community where I would have coffee chats with them and they would say, and I would say, what do you want to do one day? And they're like, something like what Scott is doing would be amazing. Right? So it's cool that you're inspiring a generation that's even a possibility.
I'm aware of that. I'm aware that like the conditions for me to get this job at LinkedIn were so like perfect to perfect to perfect to perfect. And I know that not everybody has that same environment or comes from the same set of privileges. So I'm trying to make it easier for the next person who raises their hand and says, hey, I want to do something like this. So we've put together things like playbooks on how to bring mindfulness to your workplace. And I'm even thinking about, it's early days still, but I'm even thinking about creating a platform where all of us could use, which would enable coaches or mindfulness teachers or other folks to kind of get started at their company. So more to come on that, but I'm aware of my place in the world, I think.
Yeah, and I appreciate that you acknowledge that ultimately it is a privilege, right? Like, you know, being in this bubble of tech and working at one of the best companies in the world, like sometimes we forget that, hey, the rest of the world doesn't have all these amazing opportunities and privileges, right? And just being present to that really brings gratitude.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. We're very blessed to be able to do this work and to have worked at the places I've worked.
Yeah. Yeah. And I would say similarly, I'm also very blessed to have found a company mission that I really believe in. And I also see that as it's a rarity to find a job where I can honestly on Monday mornings be like, yeah, I'm excited to work, right? Not everyone has that opportunity.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Although, so this is kind of what the book is about, right? The full body yes, change your work and your world from the inside out. And part of my premise is that we have choice, right? Regardless of, even if we haven't reached the place in our career that we think we want to, or we don't work for the company or the boss or the coworkers that we really want to. A lot of it is our own mindset on how, and I think that there, we have more power than we give ourselves credit for. So even if we find ourselves in a place that's not idyllic, and few places are, we have a choice to change that world from the inside out. One of my favorite quotes is from Rumi, you know, 13th century or 14th century Persian poet and spiritual master. He said, "Yesterday I was clever and I tried to change the world, but today I am wise and I'm working on changing myself." And I think that there's some really, really deep wisdom. It's hard to live, but deep wisdom there.
Yeah, that's really deep. Like even just thinking back to yesterday, I'm always like trying to change my wife and, you know, the people closest to me. And then I'm like, why am I trying so hard? Like, why can't I just accept them for who they are?
Yeah.
You know, it's just crazy how much energy I spend thinking about that.
We all do. And this is one of the biggest challenges in life. We're surrounded by messages. We're surrounded by tension, right? And the world kind of demands that we give attention. And it's really that attention is where our happiness lies. Are we focused on the things that are wrong, or are we focused on the things that are right? I think of it like, well, as humans, we have a negativity bias. Like we have evolved this way to stay alive. Our bodies, our minds are constantly searching for danger. This is how we stayed alive. It doesn't mean happy, just alive. It's kind of like, I call it pothole management. There can be 1,000 miles of perfect road and there's one pothole. And where does almost all of our time and energy go to? It goes to that one pothole.
So true. Right?
We get fixated on the one thing that's wrong. So think about your relationship. Think about life in general. Every part of it, when we focused on the pothole, it shapes our lives. We start thinking like, oh, the world is filled with potholes. When in reality, it's like it's 0.1%. And it's like that in every part of our world. And so the trick is, the real challenge is, how do we focus on the good things? Yes, we still need to fix the pothole. I'm not saying that. We focus on the good things, and focusing on the good things gives us strength to deal with the things that are hard. And then it's, you know, letting go of the stuff that we don't control. That's the challenge.
Yeah, there's so much that we can't control, right? Especially, I think the last 2 years have really showed us that, right?
Absolutely. So,
has brought us all closer together as a, you know, and really the humanity. And yeah, there's, I think there's more connectedness, less separation. And of course we still have ways to go, right?
Oh, for sure. And it's, you know, I think in many ways, this pandemic and everything it brought has been a gift. Okay, hear me out. Like, of course, not everything we wanted. For some, not financially or physically or emotionally or mentally, but at a deeper, deeper level, at a spiritual level, it's been a gift because it has forced us to rethink our lives. It's forced us to go inward a bit. And yes, we're challenged with our mental well-being just globally, but that has allowed some beautiful conversations to take place about the importance of our mental well-being. It's interesting when I ask people kind of over the last 2 years, what's most important for you? What are you most grateful for? It always comes down to one of two things. It's always, always either my relationships, you know, the people that I love and the close ones. And the second is my health, right? Where before it's all this stuff that we filled, right? Our possessions, our vacations, our jobs, all this noise. But really what this experience has shown us is like, you could take all that away. And really almost the only things are important once you get to a certain level is my health and my relationships. So it's a gift to have that awareness. Then what we do with it will be our own choice.
I love what you said about, yeah, people are more present to their health just because when there's an absence of something or perceived threat, and not to say this is not a, you know, but for people like us in tech or people that aren't really frontline workers, right? It's just seeing that life is limited. We can retreat, right? Or we can just be present to like, okay, I'm still alive. I'm still healthy. I have it pretty good.
Yeah. It's letting go this is the really hard part about life, right? It's having these expectations and having these things that we're really working towards and then letting go of the result. And this happens, you know, when we've been forced into it, right? Because we've been forced into a place where we maybe couldn't do some of the things we could do before. And so we're forced to not be able to live up to our expectation. But this is the challenge, right? How do I, for all of us, I think one of the central questions is, how do I get stuff done? How do I be a high performer? How do I be successful at work, but also be happy? Also be like mentally sane and emotionally balanced and zen, or what do you want to call it? I think this is one of the fundamental challenges of our lives, but I think it's possible. And for me, it kind of boils down to this idea of striving and let go, striving and let go. So what, one of the analogies I like to use, have you ever seen these sand mandalas that the Buddhist monks will do? It's these beautiful mandalas. Basically, they make them with colored sand. And sometimes they're smaller. Sometimes they're the size of a house, you know, and they'll take sometimes days, sometimes weeks, sometimes months to build these. And it's essentially a painting made out of colored sand. Now, while the monks are doing it, you know, you have a little outline and you put color in this little spot. It requires extraordinary focus and extraordinary vision of what they're going to build. And they're literally moving single grains of sand at a time, right? So an extraordinary craft to get it done. But then when it's all the way done, you know what they do? Well, look, if it were me, I'd probably shellac that thing and put it up on a wall and, you know, take pictures of it and Instagram. No, that's not what they do. They sweep it up. They sweep it up. They destroy it, essentially. They put the sand in jars and go toss the sand in a body of water as a blessing. And to me, our lives are kind of like this. There's, yes, the things that we control, we put an extraordinary focus on. And then the things that we don't control, we let go. It's so easy to say. It's so hard to do. But keeping that in mind, it helps me stay sane.
Wow, that's pretty deep. I think a lot of us, especially business folks, the higher you grow up, there's a sense of almost like not maniacal, but some people are just very intentional, right? And they almost are obsessed about it. And that's why they've gotten to the levels that you have and you know, similar folks. And it's interesting because I think nowadays we're starting to see that actually acceptance and, you know, like forgiveness and just letting it be actually provides space and just having faith that it will work out, right?
Yeah. Well, I'll give you, so this is a lesson I'm still learning every day, right? So as we talked about, my book came out, I had a chance to do a TED talk this year, a TEDx talk. And when I got invited, I was super excited. You know, I found out I knew I was leaving LinkedIn. I'm going to start this new business as a speaker and a writer and as more of a public figure. And I thought, oh, wow, the universe has provided this platform. And my mind went to these places where, you know, some TED Talks, the big ones, you know, will go to like a million or 50 million views.
Yeah.
And this is where my expectation went, focused, fixed on the result.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and just bit by bit, it became clear that, well, this is different. Right. So first it's TEDx and there's lots of TEDxes. It's not the TED main stage and it's not even a stage because of COVID. Like you have to record them in your house or in somebody's garage. And so if you've ever watched a late night comedian do the monologue from their home and try to get through it, you know, it's just not the same as when you do it in an audience.
Right.
So all these things were coming, but still I was just wildly hopeful that my TEDx talk would be successful. And then long story short, the way it worked is we record them and then there's a live show with a moderator. And then you know, the place, the recording of our talks. And I had invited my friends and family and made kind of a big deal of it. I'm ready. You know, here's my big moment. Surely Oprah will call tomorrow. All this, you know, internal nonsense. And when it came time for mine, I saw that the video quality was poor. Like, unusably poor. Like, it would have been better to have a 7-year-old hold an iPhone than what this experience was. And I was very, let's say, tested in the letting go, right? Because I had this big expectation of what I thought it was going to be. And so this is the challenge we face every day. Like, what are the things we control and what are the things we don't control? Well, I mean, I was able to get it reshot. I controlled that. And there were other things that I learned about myself that I could have controlled along the way. But a lot of it is just about letting it be. You know, and so this is our role. How can we be the best, whatever that is, the best mom, the best coach, the best executive, the best chef, and give it, you know, the attention that deserves. And then what it will be in the world is what it will be. We have no control over that. If I write a book, I can't control how many people read it. I can control the marketing I do. I can control how I wrote it, but I can't control if or how people read it. If someone builds a product, they can do everything possible, but they don't control the results at the end. None of us do. And so it's kind of like the weather, right? If the weather is rainy or sunny or whatever it is, if we don't like it, it doesn't do any good to scream at the sky, right?
Right.
All we can do is adjust to it. But we are essentially, metaphorically, screaming at the sky so much of our lives. There's so much of our lives that we have zero control over, but still we're screaming. We're working ourselves up about it.
Right.
And so the question I ask myself when I read the news, the question I ask myself is, are you going to do something about this right now? And if the answer is no, then the next statement is, then let it go. And that's really hard. It doesn't mean that we just become, you know, complacent to the world, but there is, for our mental well-being, an aspect of letting it go, which is extraordinarily important.
It's a good reminder. I think because this pandemic, it's the Omicron is back, and it seems to be, I sort of had a bit of complaining, like, this again, you know, and really consume way too much mental energy just thinking about it, right? Like you said, where it's literally nothing I can do to control it. So just let it be and, you know, ride it out. And at the end of the day, there's probably better things to focus on.
Well, so then it comes back to us, right? And I really think that we are responsible for our happiness, right? There's a lot of studies around happiness. And of course, there's some contextual things that matter. But a big, big part of our own happiness, our own contentment, is an inside job. And so, okay, if I'm going to be stuck at home for another year with Omicron or a month or a day or whatever it is, whatever the situation, I'm only in control of me. But I have to take responsibility for that. So am I going to spend the day kind of complaining to myself or griping about it or being testy? Or am I just going to try to be joyful and be happy? It's, do you watch The Crown at all?
No, the show, I haven't watched it.
It's fine. But it's about the royal family, right, in England. And it covers multiple seasons, so their whole lives. And at one point, they introduce the character or the real person of Diana, right, who's going to be Princess Diana, marries Prince Charles. And she's a 19-year-old girl. And she's excited to date the prince. And then when they get engaged, she moves into the palace. And you'd think that this is every girl's dream, right? She gets to be a princess and move into the palace.
Yeah.
But what happens in reality is she becomes isolated. She can't hang out with her friends anymore. She can't go to lunch. She can't go anywhere. It's like fancy prison. And I think about that a lot, right? We think, oh, wow, if only I had more money, if only I had more time, if I only had their life over there. No, like every one of us is facing some demon that can't be seen on the outside. So the question is, with the life that I am given, the day that I wake up to, what am I going to do about it? And that for me is very powerful because it puts it on me and I can control to some extent what I do.
That's a very good way to look at life, right? I'm reading Will Smith's biography right now, and clearly someone who's achieved so much success. And in that, he talks a lot about this concept of the more success, the more, like, when I Am Legend came out, he was like, I think it was like he made $100 million on that. And he was like, why do you think we didn't get to 180 million, right? And he was just, and then his manager was like, are you effing serious right now? And he hung up on him. And he was just like, oh wow, like that really woke me up. Like I was disappointed that I didn't make an extra 10 million on this, you know? And he was just like, how crazy is that? You know?
Yeah, we get locked into this progress, right? We get, there's a couple of books about dopamine right now. The Molecule of More, and I think another one is called Dopamine Nation.
That's a good one. Yeah.
But it's essentially our bodies crave dopamine. It's like the newness. And another way of thinking it is to call it the hedonic treadmill. So in other words, we've all experienced this in some way, right? When I was a kid, when I was 18, I looked at my, you know, a family friend, and I knew that they made a certain amount of money. And I was thinking, wow, if I ever get to the point where I make that much money, like I'll be fine. That'll be as much as I need. And that happened when I was about 26. And then it just kept moving, right? Like, oh, and now I need to make this. And whatever we are given, we get used to. And 5 minutes later, we want something new. Right? It's in the wanting, not the having. Once you have it, then it's part of your baseline and you have to want more. And so this is a very dangerous cycle, you know, because it doesn't stop. If you get to be a vice president, then you want to be a senior vice president. You want to be a CEO. If you're a CEO, then you want to be a CEO of multiple companies. Then you want to go to space.
Yep.
Right? Look around. Yeah. There's not enough money or power in the world to satisfy that piece of us. And so what can we do in our lives? It's like, first to recognize that this idea that this more is an empty promise. It does not bring happiness. Happiness is an inside job.
Yeah, it makes me think about like every time I've been promoted and then I'm happy for like a week or two. And then it's like, okay, like how can I set myself up to get promoted to mid-market or enterprise? It's just, yeah, right. We can all relate to that.
And there's nothing wrong with striving, right? Because what we're doing is we're expressing our talents, right? Because if you're a salesperson, you want to be the best salesperson you can be, right? And these promotions are a nice kind of gateway or milestone that say that we're making progress. There's nothing wrong with that. Where we get in trouble is that we expect it, right? It's like, I've been doing this job for 2 years and 10 months. And my friend, he got promoted at 2 years and 8 months. I should be promoted. Yeah. Like this is, it's the holding on. It's the attachment, right? Instead, what we focus on is, well, is there something I can do, you know, for this company to add more value? Is there a way that I can get better at my skill set? That's the stuff I control. I don't control when a new opening comes open in my group or if the promotion cycle is going to happen or if there's budget for me to have more money. I don't control any of that.
Yeah.
And that that is fundamentally one of the biggest challenges that we have in the work world is having both of these things, the striving, having a clear vision. How do we express ourselves? How do we get the most out of life? But also the letting go and just letting it be and enjoying the moment, enjoying every second of it, regardless of the external circumstances.
I love that. The fact that you're bringing this to corporate in general will affect billions of people. It's that legacy is far reaching.
Yeah, it's interesting that the same things that are true for us as individuals are true for companies. So let me share. The guys who wrote the book, Raj Sisodia, who wrote Firms of Endearment, and later Conscious Capitalism, they did the research that showed essentially that companies who created a balance among all of their stakeholders were more successful than the ones who just focused on their shareholders. So in other words, if a company on purpose takes care of their employees, takes care of their customers in a really meaningful way, wants to provide value for them, and has a strong business model for their shareholders, they make more money than companies who only focus on making money. In fact, they make 1,400% more than the S&P average, 14 times more.
Wow.
So this is mind blowing, right? So, but you know it to be true, because think about your relationships. If you have a relationship with my wife, as in, if I have a relationship with my wife, and if I am focused on getting my way 100% of the time, probably I'm not going to be in that relationship.
That's long term,
right?
True. Huh.
So I'm actually happier when I solve for both of us instead of solving for just me. And companies, it's the same way. When a company solves for all instead of just for me, they do better. So fundamentally, compassion, at the root of this, I think, is compassion. Compassion is a success strategy. It's not just some like nice to have hippy dippy thing. Like, no, this is how you build a successful business. This is how you build a successful life as a person.
Yeah, that is a good point. Why do you think, is it because some companies have a different business model that's more, hey, I'm trying to hire like kids like straight out of college, and I'm not trying to attract like, right? Because
how do some companies get there?
I guess I'm curious, like, why companies wouldn't focus on compassion then, like the opposite side of the spectrum.
Well, let's talk about the history of work for just a second. So in the 90-second history of work, in the old days, we had the agrarian age, and still, you know, people who farm or other things are still in the agrarian age. And in the agrarian age, you had kings and slaves, or you had landowners and serfs, right? And employees were not treated very well over centuries. And then you had the industrial age. Imagine all of us in a factory making the same thing. And in neither of these cases were employees treated very well. And we'll come back to this. And then now we're in the information age, right? And the information worker looks like this. We're both at home, you know, and lots of us are at home. We can do our job from our office. It doesn't matter so much if you're male or female or young or old or where you went to school. What matters is like, did you get the job done? Now, I know there's a lot that makes that not true, but it's more true than it ever has been. But the challenge is our management practices, our leadership practices are rooted in the same leadership style that were used in the agrarian age and the industrial age, which was basically, look, I told you to do it, just do it. Like, why are we having this conversation? But now what it requires, and that's true of this, just focus on the numbers, you know, but more and more companies are waking up to this idea, or they've been forced to, or they realize it's just better that if I deeply know my customer, if I deeply take care of my customer, that's a good thing, right? Versus just, hey, I make black cars and you can have one as long as it's black. In the same way with employees, instead of just like viewing them as replaceable, like you'd plug in a battery and take one out and put one in, now we realize like actually a company like LinkedIn and others like it, we don't have hard assets. We don't have a manufacturing line. We're not selling copper or cars. We're selling information. And so that means that our number one asset by a long ways is our people. And an engineer or a product manager with a good resume, a good LinkedIn profile can literally go wherever they want in the valley. They are super valuable in a way that did not happen in the agrarian age. And so our management and leadership practices have not quite caught up to this world. In some cases, they're being forced to, and we're seeing the results of that. They're very good. Companies that have this type of culture that takes care of the whole are doing very well. But as you point out, there are many companies who are not quite there yet. And because we're all human and because we're all not enlightened, you will always have companies that some are doing the, you know, in this kind of different way, in this compassionate way, and some are still in this command and control way, because frankly, it's easier.
Yeah, that's helpful to see that, right? Because like you said, even our human minds have not evolved, right, from survival and looking for danger and threats. So in the same way, a lot of the education system, a lot of the systems we have, because so much has changed recently, it takes time to change. And, you know, our bodies are still pretty old school. And similarly, all these organizations, a lot of organizations are still doing what was preached years and years ago.
That's exactly right. The same challenge we have as individuals. It's kind of like, you know, starting a healthy habit. It's harder to eat broccoli than it is to eat potato chips.
Right.
I can attest. Right. It takes an amount of long-term thinking to say, well, actually, I could eat these potato chips now, but long-term, I'm not going to feel good about it.
Mm.
In the same way that that's hard for us as a company, it's hard to say, well, our customers don't need this. Right. So let's not just jam it down their throats at the end of the quarter so you can hit your quota. Let's have a longer conversation and draw this out. And maybe we can make something work next quarter or a year from now. It's that long-term thinking, which is very hard, especially in an environment where we're driven by the quarterly Wall Street cycles.
Yep.
Right. That quarterly Wall Street cycle is like that potato chip cycle in my brain. Right. If I'm just thinking about short term, these sour cream potato chips are awesome. That's like,
right.
Hey, just do the dirty deal at the end of the quarter because we need to hit our number without thinking about what the long term consequence is. But if we're focused on the long term value for our customers, same thing with our employees. Yeah, I can make everybody work 110 hours in the last 4 weeks of the quarter, but they're probably not going to be here long term.
Right.
Right. Or I could do everything I can to make it a more sane environment and build an environment where people can have balance and they can do their best work, right? It's good for everybody over the long term.
Mm. Thank you so much, Scott. So many lessons in just mindfulness, presence. Like, how can we apply these concepts to also just have more peace of mind in life, right? Instead of thinking about the next. Where can people find you?
Yeah, sure. So you can find me at scottshute.com, or you can go to thefullbodyyes.com. This was my COVID project, was this book, The Full Body Yes. Yay! Woohoo! Got a copy. In companies, I think I mentioned I'm doing coaching and consulting and public speaking. So if I can be of service in any way at your shop, let me know, because the world needs more of compassion, right? Operationalized, right? And this is where I feel my place in the world is combining these two things, the practicality of work and having been in a business environment, but also this deep kind of wisdom that already exists out there and all these wisdom teachings. So that's where you can find me. And you can always drop me a note at my email, scott@scottshute.com, if you have any questions or just to say hi.
Awesome. And also I'll link to all the websites in the cool notes as well.
I appreciate that.
Thank you so much, Scott. Appreciate you.
My pleasure. Have a good one.